I remember back to a time when Lisa and I were still dating and we were in youth group. And on this one weekend, our youth group decided to go to Talofofo Falls. Back then, you actually had to hike out to the falls. Can we get the lights dimmed in here just a little bit, Mark? Now, not all these pictures are of us and our youth group, okay? There's some that I found so that you can get an idea of what it was like. And this is it. So what you would do is you would park out on the main road, and then you're walking down this dirt road. And you're walking down this dirt road that some off-road vehicles could get down. You know, it's kind of rough, but most of us parked out there. So you're walking down this dirt road. This dirt road becomes kind of a trail. Okay, and you're walking, and this trail eventually becomes an overgrown path, and you're working your way through the boonies. And it's hot, and it's humid, and it's muggy, and you're starting to sweat, and you're just going, we've been at this for half an hour, 45 minutes, maybe even an hour if you're walking slow. And you're walking along, and you're just, oh man, can't this be over, can't this be over? And then all of a sudden, there it is. You step out into the clearing, and there is Talofofo Falls. Go ahead and go to the next one, Colin. I don't have them all in order. They're just kind of there. This is Talofofo Falls. And you step out, and that's what you're greeted with, this water cascading over the cliff down into a cool pool, and it's clear, clean water. And you quickly jettison your backpack, take your shoes off as good as you can, and jump in the water and go, oh, this feels so good. And it was great. And so we went there, and this is not our group. This is another group that was there. It was a picture I found. But this is Talofofo Falls, and you're there at Talofofo Falls. And off on the side, it's on this side of the picture. You can't really see it from there. There's a spot where you could climb up and jump off into the water. So a lot of us are doing that, and you're jumping off into the water and splash and doing this. Somehow, some way, we were able to convince Lisa that she should climb up there and jump off into the water. Now, if you know anything about Lisa, you know two things. One is, she's afraid of heights. The other is, she really does not know how to swim very well. She's so afraid of heights that when we're watching television or a movie and there's high places, she gets all queasy and all quivery from that. This is how bad it is. We just had our 30-year reunion on Guam, and we weren't able to go. But some of our classmates were there, and were friends on Facebook. And I was looking at their pictures and going through their pictures on Facebook, and they came across one of Two Lovers Leap, which is, there's a legend about some two lovers that jumped off and killed themselves because their parents wouldn't let them be together. And it's way up in the air. And somebody was up there, and they took a picture down from the leap down to the water below and stuff like that. And Lisa happens to come walking in as I'm looking at this picture, and she looks and goes, oh, just from the thought of being that high in the air and stuff like that. That's how bad it was. So most of us, what we'd do is we would just kind of take the direct route and climb up to the cliff and jump in. Well, Lisa couldn't do that. So what she did is there's a way you can kind of walk around, and you're kind of going through the boonies, and you come out, and then all of a sudden you're there. And there is the pool out there, and the cliff is right here, and you're going, and that is when it happened. That is when the wall of fear kicked in, and Lisa's standing there going, and she has a friend with her, and the two of them stand there, and they won't jump. And so where you're saying, it's okay, you can jump. You can jump. It'll be, now there you go. That's more of a modern day picture. So it's kind of over on this side up over here on the green, and you would jump into the pool and do that. So Lisa's standing there, and she's hit this wall of fear, and she's standing there. It's okay, jump. It's okay. It'll be safe and stuff. Somehow we convinced her, and she bent her legs, and she pushed off. And now she's traveling down into the water. And that is when the wall of fear strikes again, because Lisa does not know how to swim. Now, that is actually me jumping off there, okay? But Lisa does not know how to swim, so she's got to figure out how she's going to land in the water and not drown. How she's going to keep herself afloat, how she's going to make it to the edge. Well, we'll shorten all this a little bit. The whole time Lisa's up there and she's thinking of jumping, it's only, you know, 25, 30 feet. It's not real high. Just a little jump there. So, okay, if you've got fear of heights, then it's really high. And if you've got fear of heights and you're afraid of water, it's even worse. But she still jumped in. So this whole time, she's standing up there. She walks around and she's standing up there. The whole time she's up there, I'm in the water doing this treading thing. It's okay, don't worry, jump in and I'll save you stuff. So she jumps, she finally jumps in. She hits the water. I go over and collect her. I don't know how it is that she manages to do this, but she jumps in the water and she still gets water in her nose. So, but Yeah, she get. How do you jump in the water and get water in your nose? I can swim and spin around and do circles and do all kinds of stuff, and I don't get water in my nose. She just jumps in. Well, she got water in her nose, so we finally got her cleared off, got her to the side and of the pool, and then we continued to play and to do all this other stuff. So that is our adventure of Talofofo Falls when we were in youth group. Now, last week, I spoke of the fear of flying. You might remember that, of spiders, of confined spaces, of the number 13. And I had a list of fears, and when we went out to lunch last week, we were going through that. There is actually a fear, and I couldn't ever even begin to tell it to you. It is the fear of Friday the 13th, which is even longer. Then there's one, it's the fear of long words, and it is like this long in little type, and it's like, forget it, I'm not even going to try. But a whole listing of different fears. And fear is sometimes an unexpected wall that comes across our path from time to time. And when it does, we have a decision to make to either freeze or to make a choice to overcome our fear. Now this, you might want to stall and let them, we caught everybody by surprise on that one, Colin. This week, we're doing our second week in a 6-week series called Get Your Feet Wet. And last week we started this examination of Matthew chapter 14, verses 22 through 33. And that is the story of Peter walking on the water toward Jesus in the midst of a sudden storm. We focused on that dialogue between Jesus and Peter prior to Peter getting out of the boat. We spoke of how boats create kind of a comfort zone for us, and we find it hard to get out. And because of that, that keeps us from doing what the Lord may have for us. Now, our main text for this morning is just one verse. It is Matthew chapter 14, verse 26. And the title of the message is The Wall Called Fear. And our text, it will be up there, and you can follow along in your Bible if you have them. Matthew chapter 14, verse 26 reads like this. When the disciples saw him, they screamed in terror, thinking he was a ghost. Now, here's a rhetorical question. I don't expect responses now, but we can respond in a little bit. What scares you? What are your source or sources of fears? Exactly. Why did the disciples scream when they saw Jesus? Ghosts, exactly. See, the answer works all the time. Did seeing a ghost actually lead them to believe that they were dying, if not already dead? John Ortberg suggests, fear will tell you what your boat is. How I see it is this way. You tell me what your boat is, and I will tell you what your fear is. Ortberg talks about boats called vocation, relationships, secrecy, addiction, maybe a parent, maybe success. The thing about our boats is they easily become our security rather than the Lord being our security. We rely more on our boats than we do on God Himself. And again, the purpose in getting out of that boat is not to be stupid and careless, but to believe in faith that by getting out of the boat, we are obeying the Lord. Okay, I'm going to take a time out for a minute because it just crossed through my mind. Camp meeting. They're talking stuff. The guy who was leading, Kelly Ballard, he came up with the song called That's Stupid. It was awesome. The message, Steve Childs was doing this message and doing this message on things that were that stupid, doing things. And so he's in the back, Kelly Ballard's in the back, and he writes this song in the middle of the service, and we sing it at the end, That's Stupid. It was so cool. We're going to find a way to get it put out and publicized for all of us. Okay, sorry about that, but that's where my mind goes. Okay, getting out of your boat, making sure that our security is in God and not necessarily in our boats. As we study our main text this morning, we observe that when Jesus appeared, the disciples screamed in terror. For the disciples in a tossing boat. And my mind thinks of Deadliest Catch. If you ever watch that, man, that boat is going all over the place. I imagine the disciples just rocking back and forth, and water's probably coming over in this boat, and the boat's getting swamped. It's a very scary scenario. Then they see someone come walking on the water, which is impossible to do. Okay, some of you may not, it is impossible to do. And that created an internal overload in these terrified and troubled men's hearts. And they screamed in terror, thinking that it was a ghost. Now, we don't have to be in a ghost-seeing storm to scream out in terror, or frustration, or pain, or fear. We have had those moments when we are truly at our wits' end. The observation that I make about this passage is that Jesus scares the 12. The 12 are experiencing fear overload. And fear keeps the 12 from seeing Jesus instead of a ghost. Max Lucado, he makes an interesting point when he says in his book, he wrote a book called Fearless. And in his book, he wrote this. They didn't expect Jesus to come to them this way. Neither do we. We expect him to come in the form of peaceful hymns and Easter Sundays or quiet retreats. We expect to find him in morning devotionals, church suppers, and meditation. We never expect to see him in a bear market or pink slips or a lawsuit or foreclosure or even war. We never expect to see him in a storm. But it is in a storm that he does his finest work. For it is in storms that he has our keenest attention. Now, why? Why do we expect Jesus to show up only in the nice, quiet times and not in the earth-shattering, emotionally impacting loudness of life? Why do we think Jesus is only close to us when everything is good? And that is somewhere else, off in the distance, when it's difficult and lonely and rough and fearful. For a few moments, let's think about this wall called fear. First of all, what is fear? When you think of fear, what comes to mind? Now you can answer. That's not rhetorical. I'd like to hear from you. When you think of fear, when I say fear, when you think of fear, what comes to your mind? Snakes? Unknown? Heights? Freddy Krueger? Claustrophobia? Fear Factor? There was a movie, there was a show called Fear Factor, and they did all kinds of things like that. But see, you all get the picture. That's the idea. What is it that we're afraid of and stuff like that? Fear, you know, it is mentioned quite often in the Bible. Some people say that fear is the most mentioned command from God to us. Every time God shows up or an angel shows up, why is it that he has to say, don't be afraid, fear not? But he does. Jesus told the disciples in this situation, as well as others, don't be afraid, fear not. Fear is terror, dread, horror, panic, and alarm. We experience it at the doctor's office when we're waiting for the doctor to tell us the results of a report. We experience it when we get that 3 a.m. phone call. We experience it when we sense a change in a relationship that leaves us unsettled. Now, I think that there is some legitimacy to fear. Imagine we're going to the zoo, and we go to the zoo and we're walking around, and we see that the front entrance to the lion cage is wide open, and we look, and there are no lions in there. Fear, that is an appropriate response. And running away is probably fairly appropriate as well. Other than standing there going, here, kitty, 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 trying to get the lion. See, it just doesn't work. So fear is legitimate. One of the greatest fears we have is the fear of change. Whether it is planned or unplanned, it is the fear of change. Why is that? Why do we fear change so much? It is because we don't like to feel that we are out of control. When things are changing around us, we don't have the control. But here's a question. How much of life is actually within our control? How much of it? Very little. Yeah, that's right. And you know, sometimes we spend too much energy on trying to control things that we cannot control instead of trying to control the things that we can, like our attitudes, our priorities, our actions. See, you all got the picture. Fear is real, but sometimes it is a very nebulous thing. We feel it, but we're not really sure why. There is also worry. And you know, worry, it's a close relative. It's like a brother or sister close. Jesus spoke about not worrying, but to trust the Father. But we still worry. We worry about our kids. We worry about our jobs. We worry about our health, our car. We worry about our money. This past week, camp meeting. On Wednesday, we got the privilege of providing meals for the youth. On Wednesday, we provided lunch. And Lisa decided it would be a good time to do Kahlua pork. So I said, okay. And I went out, and I went to the first service the youth had, and I counted. They're sitting there, and I'm counting them all in the chapel, counting them. I got about 100 of them. 100 youth and adults are there. So 100 of them. So I said, okay, I need to go out and buy meat for 100 of them. And so I went down to the place, and I bought meat, and I got three great big hunks of meat, and I had it on there, and it was about 40 pounds. 42.3 pounds. And I took it home, and I was worried it wasn't enough. I even told Lisa, I need to go get more meat. This isn't going to be enough meat. They're going to have more show up. This isn't enough. And I spoke to Aaron, and Aaron says, oh, we only have about 80. And I go, but I counted over 100. And he said, oh, we only have about 80 or so. I'm worried. It's Tuesday night, I start cooking the meat. Wednesday, it's ready. I get it all prepared. We show up. And Don and Carol are helping me, and we get it there. And I have these two great big pots of meat, and I got them plugged in. They're warming, and the smell's going up there. And I'm still worried. And we're setting them out there, and I'm worried. So I go upstairs, but I have to know. So I go upstairs, because we're underneath. I go upstairs, and I count. And I'm counting all the youth and everything and all the adults in there. And I go downstairs, and Don's down there, and Carol was out somewhere. And I go down to Don. I said, Don, there's 120 people up there. I don't have enough food. I got to figure out, we're going to run out of food. And Don and I are setting the tables up, and we're doing Kahlua sandwiches. And we got these hamburger buns. And Don counts the buns, and there's only 20 in a package and not 25. So now we only have 80 buns and not 100 buns, which we thought we were going to have. Don, we don't even have enough of this. Okay, is there a way we can get more? Then he found out that there was actually three packages on one table and two on another, so we had enough of those. I'm still panicked. I'm worried. I'm going back and forth. I'll shorten this a little bit. The youth come down. They all gather in there. They eat. They eat all they can eat. They're saying, I'm so stuffed I can barely move, and they're all done. I still had one full container left over of Kahlua pork. So much so that I called Lisa and said, I got so much meat left over. Call anybody on the worship team who's going to be here. Tell them we'll provide them with dinner tonight. Okay? And we did that. And then there were people after the service. We said, hey, if you're here and you want, we'll give you plates. You can take it home with you. So some of you actually took plates of Kahlua home with you. I still have Kahlua at my house. I have a tray. It's a covered tray. It's about that big, about that thick. It is full. Solid full of Kahlua. If you want more Kahlua, let me know, okay? I got more than Lisa and I could ever possibly eat. I just finished stuff from her birthday, which was July, what day was your birthday? July 12th. Like I wouldn't know that. See, I was worried. I mean, I was back and forth pacing and worried about it and all this other stuff. How helpful is all the worrying been in your life? Has it helped you to accomplish anything other than more gray hairs or an ulcer? But what did Jesus say? In Matthew chapter 6, Jesus says, so I tell you, don't worry about everyday life, whether you have enough food, drink, and clothes. Doesn't life consist of more than food and clothing? You know, I was actually practicing this through all that, too. I have this sermon. I'm practicing this sermon while I am standing there frantically back and forth worrying. Then there's anxiety. Paul wrote in Philippians chapter 4, verses 6 and 7, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension, shall guard your hearts and mind in Christ Jesus. What I want for us to do is, Colin's going to put up here for it. I want you to repeat that verse with me. Just verse 6, which is just the beginning of it. It's right up there for you. Repeat it with me. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. Let's do it again. Let it really sink in. See, this is what it's all about. Let this verse sink in. Say it again. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. Now, I've modified it just a little bit, and Colin's going to pop it up there for you again. Let's say it this way. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your fears, worries, and anxieties be made known to God. See, that's what it's about. Now, you may be saying, so what? So what, Val? The economy is still bad, in my opinion. My finances are getting tight, hard to find a job. All this health stuff is not going the way I want it to go. My relationship with a friend is disintegrating. Bad things are just happening. So what? Let me suggest that you ponder for a moment this statement from the words of Avery and Matt Willis. They wrote a book called Learning to Soar, How to Grow Through Transition and Trials. And this is what they said. Sometimes we fear situations and problems in life because we unconsciously regard them as bigger than our God. I'm going to say it for you one more time. Sometimes when you know the end, it really helps to hear the beginning. Sometimes we fear situations and problems in life because we unconsciously regard them as bigger than our God. I also think that we are more afraid because of our fear of failure. It is so strong that we would rather not try than to look bad. Where does that come from? I think it ultimately comes back from the Garden of Eden and from the shame that we carry around inside of us. This is shame that can only be dealt with the Lord's help and His touch. The other source of shame is the shaming voices of either ourselves or others that we have heard down through the years that ultimately say, if you fail, you are not good enough. If I fail, I will be rejected. When I was in middle school and high school, I played in sports. And I was so desperate for my mom to be there and to watch me. I did everything I could trying to be the best athlete, the best soccer player, the best runner that I could, so that my mom would be there and tell me I was doing a great job. My dad was gone. He had taken off years before, and my mom was busy working, and she wasn't there. And I tried and I tried and I tried. I just so wanted to hear her say that. And all the time in my mind, I'm saying, I'm not good enough. And I think I still go through a lot of that now. And again, even in these situations, in my situation, we need God's help. Because those voices, even the voices of myself, are powerful voices and keep me from doing what God has for me. Now, it would be very easy to end this sermon right now, right here. But leaving this message at verse 26 would leave us hanging without resolution. Just like fear does. You see, that is why there is verse 27. Verse 27 says, but Jesus spoke to them at once. It's all right, he said. I am here. Don't be afraid. More than once in my life, when I have truly given my fears over to God, the peace of God that Paul spoke of came flooding into my heart, into me. If we will truly surrender our fears over to God, His peace will take over. We're going to conclude a little bit differently today. Here's what we're going to do. In your bulletins, there was a piece of paper that you had. And on it, it was a little piece of paper. I don't have one up here with me. It should have said, my greatest fear. Yeah, Karen's got one there. Hopefully you have one. If you do not have one, the ushers have some back there. And here's what I would like for you to do. Write down what your greatest fear is. What is your greatest fear? And write it down on there. And then pray this scripture prayer. I modified it just a little bit. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let this fear, and name it. Somehow name what that fear is. Turn that over to God. Make it known to him. And the ushers have pins. If you need a pin, they'll bring one around for you. And when you are done praying over that fear and you've named it, fold it up, bring it up here, and lay it right here in the altar. We're going to give you some time to do that. What is your greatest fear?